Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Coordinators speaking yesterday. We heard from Eric Bieniemy a little bit earlier in the show. The defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, addressing the media as well. And he he just wants training camp. So he's such a coach. It's awesome.
He is. But I think the one thing that I really took away from listening to Eric Bieniemy and Steve Spagnuolo yesterday, no offense, I didn't really listen to Dave Tobe speak yesterday, but I listened to the offensive and defensive coordinators. And the one
and
thing
that special team, you're supposed to do them all, right, if you have offense, defense, and special teams.
I feel confident in Tobe. Okay,
so
he's going to be fine.
Leave that one out.
But I think they all took on the Andy Reid, hey, we got this mentality. Like you could just kind of sense
sure.
that. You know, like they're all very confident. They all understand the situation that they're in. And I think as a Chiefs fan, we got to feel really good to have these men, not just Andy Reid, but all of these men, you know, in charge of the organization right now. Because you could be running around like Chicken Little with your head cut off and panicking like all these college coaches are doing right now. Or you could just be like Andy Reid sitting at an antique table in the basement and his coaches are in their rooms and at their houses doing their thing. And everybody's going, I mean, we're going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. Like, as a coach and as a leader right now during these COVID times, you better be cool. You better be calm. You better be collected. You better put off that, hey, we got this attitude. Or otherwise, when you get back to it, man, it's going to be panic at the disco for a lot of people. And I think once the Kansas City Chiefs get back into doing their thing, everybody's going to be fine. Everything's going to be cool, and everybody's going to be ready to roll.
Spags just wants a little training camp, man. He loves it. It's his thing. Got to have it.
Until they tell us differently, we're very hopeful we get the training camp. I think I've told you this before. Training camp is one of my all-time favorite things to do in this business because you're up there, you're all together, you're in a dorm. I still like that. And it's all football, being around the guys. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and pray that we can have a normal training camp.
Yeah, he's Spags like whipping guys dorm. With towels and things
like
that.
He just wants to go to the dorm.
He does. And I think what Spags said there at the beginning, especially until they tell us otherwise, we're preparing like it's going to be normal. And I think that's the way that everybody needs to be approaching everything right now. Until they tell us otherwise, this is what we're going to do. And I think that's why when you look around and you see the NFL and the way that they've handled things and the way that Roger Goodell has become the one voice on all of this, this is why the NFL, I feel like, is in a really good spot right now because they're handling it that way. They're preparing for the season like it's going to happen, like it's going to be normal until they are told otherwise. There's no panic. There's no, you know, there's no nervousness, you know, at least that they're portraying, you know, in front of the scenes. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it feels like everybody's just saying, you know what, we're just going to prepare for normal until they tell us that normal isn't going to happen. And I think that's going to be what saves the National Football League this year, and that's why we're going to get a normal NFL season, because they're preparing to be normal. They're not making excuses. They're not coming up with reasons why they can't. Everybody's coming up with reasons why they can, unlike Major League Baseball, which is like, well, we can't spit sunflower seeds. I don't know that we want to put our players in that position.
We need to begin the season better, in my opinion. We knew Hitch and I talked about this yesterday because I called him yesterday just to, I hadn't talked to him in a while, but we knew there were going to be bumps in the road early with regards to feeling out coaches and players and what we had, what they could do, and a new system and the whole thing. And we went through some rough patches, but really because of the assistant coaches we have who just kept pounding the details and over and over and over and over, and the guys embracing it and not getting frustrated with all the walk-ups that we took. My hope is that we're past that, and it would be really nice if we could come out of the blocks and play good defense at the beginning of the season, not wait. Yeah, I think we maybe felt like it was 7 or 8 games before we really got in the groove.
But have a better chance to do it. And also, it wasn't like it was his expectation that they come flying out of the chute line. The hope was that, but I think the realistic approach is how it went down.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of laid the groundwork for everybody a year ago, and I said, look, they're not going to be good in at least the first month of the season. I mean, that's just the way it goes from a defensive standpoint. It took about 2 months of that season before they really started to click and really started to get better. But now in year two of this defense, you didn't really lose anybody, right? You lost Reggie Ragland off your defense this year. Whoop-de-doo, okay? So you got everybody coming back. Everybody knows the system. Now there's no excuse for you to not go out there and start fast. And I think if this defense can start fast and they can play, you know, to start the season like they finished the last half of the season, the last 8 games of the season, including the postseason, if they start the season this way, that's going to carry them the entire way. And it's going to be a defense that people are going to be fearing and an offense that teams are going to be fearing in the NFL.
Spags on knowing what they have on defense. I mean, this is, you brought back a whole bunch of starters, right? You've added some draft picks, but the framework is very much in place right now, where it was a kind of a work in progress a year ago.
Knowing what the abilities of those guys already going into year two might keep us from having to experiment, so to speak. And we can keep, you know, we've sat here with the scheme and said, okay, let's keep this because our guys are really good at it. And maybe we get rid of that, add something in. So there is, you know, the hope is that you grow in the system. You can expand a little bit, just like Andy always talks about with his offense, where they keep adding. I know you guys had all kinds of questions for Patrick Mahomes. What can he do in his second year? You know, and you're right where you're going. And I think Andy told you that you keep adding and building what they can absorb. The more they embrace, you know, the better we can be. I feel the same way on defense because I do think in this league nowadays, you got to be multiple in enough regards to keep people off balance, so to speak. So hopefully we can do that.
Interesting stuff there from Steve Spagnuolo when it comes to, you know, how year two is going to be different. Well, I know everybody now. I know what they can do. I know what they're capable of doing. I don't have to use the first, you know, month or two of the season to try to figure out
what player. Get rid of the stuff that doesn't work.
Right, yeah. There's nothing in this, you know, scheme now that I know they're not capable of doing. I know what everybody is capable of doing. And so now that I know that, I'm able to put those players in a position to be more successful because, you know, this part of the playbook, you know, guys weren't that successful. Let's throw that away. Let's never look at that again. There's no reason to go back to that when we've got all of these plays and all of these schemes and all of these, you know, packages that work, that players are successful at. We'll run those. So the coach doesn't have to learn the player. The player doesn't have to learn the coach. And now you're a year ahead of where you were last year, obviously, in learning each other and feeling each other out. And that makes it so much easier, in my opinion, for Steve Spagnuolo to do his job because now he knows truly what his players are capable of doing. He's got a 16-game regular season. He's got 3 postseason games to look at as well. And now you're not guessing or thinking or, you know, going off of practice and what guys did in St. Joe. You're going off of real games, and you can put together a much better game plan knowing all of that than you could a year ago with this defense.
One addition is Taco Charlton, kind of a reclamation project, maybe former first round picks, played at a couple of stops already, and he's being added now to the defensive mix.
We were really fortunate last year when we got Emmanuel Agba, and he surfaced in the system, played good football, and now he's at Miami. And Emmanuel and I have talked about this a lot. A change of scenery for him was really good. So I think the hope certainly is that maybe Taco could do the same thing. Now, we don't know that. You know, unfortunately, we don't have – Coach Daly and I don't have the chance to get to know him quite as well through a computer. But I've heard really good things about him, and we're hopeful. I mean, he gets thrown in the mix with everybody else, and hopefully he can find a guy on the edge that can – help us going forward. But we'll find that out. We've got a long way to go, I guess, before we can determine that.
Look, he's putting more into getting to know Taco Charlton through the computer, as he said there. I mean, people are finding wives in Russia through the computer, okay? I mean, people are doing online
dating.
Aren't they
doing that before?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, Steve Spagnuolo's standards of learning who Taco Charlton are may be higher than some folks trying to find a spouse.
Now, it could be Ogba, right? And I said this when we're just kind of looking at his numbers last year. He gives you 10 games, 5 sacks. That's a good rotational defensive end.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a guy you're putting in the rotation. He was somebody else's first-round draft
pick.
Yeah,
and I think that you said that last week, and that's kind of rung true to me. Like, that's important. It's not our guy.
It's not your first-round. It's somebody else's first-round. This is just a guy coming in to try to fill a rotational defensive line spot. And he gives you that. You're going to be happy. He gives you more than that. You're like, okay, he found his role. He found his niche.
Yeah.
You didn't spend a first-round pick on the guy.
No. I mean, anything you get out of this guy right now is extra, is awesome. I mean, there's no expectation, I don't think, for Taco Charlton. I mean, there's an expectation from Frank Clark, as we heard last week. He's going to turn him into a great football player, and that's all well and good, and I hope he does. But for us to sit here and go, oh, this is a failed first-round draft pick, not our first-round draft pick. It doesn't matter. He's now two teams removed from a first-round draft pick. He's just a guy, and
that's
if he
gravy.
Can give you something, if he can be Mike Pinnell, then, hey, we're going to be really happy with Taco Charlton.
A big revelation from the rewatch we'll discuss next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
When you keep getting pinned back in your own end zone, that's a tough, tough hole to get out of. And no one's going to make any excuse. They've got to do it themselves.
Chiefs coming. A third down intercepted. It's a pick six. Tom Bahali right in his bread basket, and Kansas City builds on its lead.
The call on CBS, our rewatch game this week, was Andy's first game at Jacksonville, week one of 2013. Tom Bahali with a pick six.
How about that? I forgot about the Tom Bahali pick six. You know who else played really well in that game? Remember Brandon Flowers? Remember when he played for the Chiefs? He was really good in that football game.
We saw him
well.
At the Super Bowl.
We did?
Yeah. Talked to Brandon for a little bit, yeah.
And I missed him. Yeah. Was he on the show?
No. He was, like, venturing around. Maybe you weren't with me then.
I don't think so.
I talked to him for a little bit.
I don't really remember Brandon Flowers being there.
He was really excited for the Chiefs. So yeah.
Of course, it was a 10-day bender in Miami, but whatever.
I still said he's got one of the, aside from Lenny, I said he's got maybe the most iconic, in my mind, Chiefs photo ever.
Oh, and getting
he's like,
fingers.
The one in Oakland, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah, that's that. I have that at my house.
Yeah, how could you not? Wouldn't you? Yeah.
He's like, my kid thinks it's great.
Absolutely. Phenomenal picture.
Yes,
yeah, Lenny smoking a butt and Brandon Flowers getting the birds.
In Oakland.
That's what we're going to miss with Las Vegas, too. It's just not going to be the same. That's not going to be a home field environment for the Raiders. It is going to be a transient stadium with a lot of people wearing colored shirts that don't match either team that's playing because they're there on vacation.
It's going to be like London.
Yeah, exactly what it's going to be.
London,
yeah.
Where they pan the crowd and they got all random NFL shirts on. Yeah, yeah. There's going to be a little bit of that.
Yeah, I just don't feel like it's going to be a great home field advantage for the Raiders. But again, it's not about that anymore. It's about making all the money you possibly can. And maybe it's a bad time to open a stadium. Maybe we'll never get back to those home field advantages like we saw over the years with, you know, COVID and everybody, you know, now staying home and not going to games. So it may not matter what type of stadium they're in. But, you know, Brandon Flowers was really good that day. Obviously, Tomba was really good that day. And, you know, I noticed in that game, man, that defense played fast. They looked like they were a notch above what Jacksonville was doing. Now, they had Blaine Gabbert as their quarterback. But still, I mean, it looked like they were playing faster and quicker than the Jacksonville Jaguars. And in fact, that team, Jacksonville, did not cross the midfield stripe until there was 7:05 to go in the game. That was the first time they crossed the 50-yard line with 7 minutes to go in the game. So the defense played well. And I still believe throughout all of these rewatches, it wasn't Bob Sutton. It was the players. As the players aged, Josh, the Chiefs didn't do much to backfill. They relied on aging guys and never took account that these guys are getting old. And as much as we blame Dorsey for all the bad contracts that he signed, his sticking with those old players and not getting younger on defense, that was a big crime. I mean, we relied too much on Tom Bahali too late. We relied too much on Eric Berry too late. We relied too much on Justin Houston too late. And they didn't do a good enough job of replacing those kind of big-name players that got old. And as they got old and slowed down, which happens to everybody who gets old, they started to not play as well. We started to blame the system because we looked at the names and we went, well, that's Tom Bali, that's Justin Houston, that's Eric Berry, not wanting to accept that maybe those guys got old and slower, and they didn't really put Bob Sutton in the best possible position to succeed because they kind of forgot about that defensive side of the football. Because in those first couple of years, that defense was really, really good. And when Bob Sutton got fired, a lot of the names on the back of the jerseys were still the same, but they were about 6 years older than when Bob Sutton took over.
Hey, it's a tough gig, and those that can master when to turn people over are geniuses, right?
Yeah.
I'd be, like I've said, I'd be a terrible general manager. I would hang on, and some of you are saying, oh, of course you would. I would hang on to players. I would fall in love with players. Mm-hmm. And you get in those positions where you don't turn over fast enough. The key is turning things over at the right time.
Right. And I would be a guy who would probably turn it over quicker.
And backfilling and always thinking about who's coming next. Not pining for who's coming next, but always be thinking about it. How you can turn over your roster. And I think defensively, you know, a lot of those things didn't turn over fast enough.
No, they really didn't.
And it was hard too at the time. You know, looking back at the time, you're like, those were our guys. That's hard to get away from at times, and I think the Chiefs were a victim of that.
But that's the mindset we have to get out of now because those aren't our guys. Mahomes is our guy right now. Andy Reid is our guy right now. Brett Veach is our guy right now. The other 52 people out there are just people out there that are expendable, and that's the other thing that I kind of realized again watching that. And in 2013, we're sitting there saying to ourselves, there's no way we can get rid of Berry or Tomba or Houston or DJ or Charles or Poe or Bo or McCluster. And even when they got rid of Alex Smith and moved on to Patrick Mahomes, there were people still dragging their feet going, wow, Alex is a pretty good quarterback. Do we want to necessarily let him go? There were still people in that camp. So,
well, Andy.
And Andy. But, I mean, it continues to show me that everybody on this roster is expendable right now except for Patrick Mahomes. Every player we love, they got rid of, and it allowed the Chiefs to get better at that position and in turn became a better team. So when we sit around and we say we can't get rid of so-and-so or we can't get rid of that guy or we can't get rid of this guy, the answer is yes, we can get rid of those players because look at the roster overhaul and the roster growth from a talent standpoint they had when Andy Reid took over to where it's been right now. It's been an amazing roster overhaul. I can't look at this roster right now and off the top of my head say they got worse at a position since Andy Reid has taken over. Even with all of those big names, maybe the cornerback position is something you can argue with right now.
I think
now,
from a talent perspective.
You had Brandon Flowers and Marcus Peters and some guys like that. Yeah. But Flowers got old and Peters just wasn't going to work here. They didn't want him anymore, right?
They've made it work.
Yeah.
They've made it work.
But they've made it work. But overall, every single position on the field that you look at in 2020 – and from when Andy Reid took over in 2013, they have made significantly better. The offensive line, the tight ends, the wide receivers, you know, the running backs have an opportunity to do so as a stable of running backs. Maybe not that individual Jamal Charles, but as a stable of running backs. The quarterback position, the defensive line, the defensive ends, the linebackers potentially, you know, have an opportunity with Willie Gay's addition now to be better than when they took over. The two safeties are playing awesome right now. So I think ultimately when you look at this team from top to bottom, from position to position, every single position has gotten better for the most part since Andy Reid has taken over. That's hard to do, but that should allow you as a Chiefs fan and me as a Chiefs fan and you as a Chiefs fan, Josh, to say, you know what? I can't fall in love with the name on the back of the jersey. And when it's time to move on, it is time to rip that Band-Aid off and move on because when they held on too long, that's ultimately when they met their demise and that AFC Championship game and holding on to aging veteran defensive players instead of ripping that Band-Aid off a couple of years earlier. And maybe if they rip the Band-Aid off a couple of years earlier on some of those guys, maybe we do have another Super Bowl championship right now.
And on offense, those questions are going to surface as well. I'm with you that – you look, and this rewatch has helped that too. Just
because we thought Dexter McCluster was the end all be all. Oh my God, how good Dexter is!
Just seeing in
they got Tyreek Hill.
Even the pre Andy again. Now we're talking about 7 years here. It's the massive turnover that takes place in the NFL anyway.
Yeah.
That you look at rosters like, oh, that guy's still here, but boy, there's nobody around him anymore. That player has to be the quarterback.
Be the quarterback.
If you've got your quarterback, you have to do that. And everything else. Everything else you have to be always thinking about turning over.
Yep.
At every position. There's going to be some tough positions on offense eventually.
It's coming soon. Sooner rather than later.
Eventually, there's going to be some tough decisions on Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill.
87 and 10. Absolutely.
Right? Those are going to happen sooner rather than later. And they're going to be difficult ones.
And I want you to think back to 2013. Oh, we can never get rid of Dexter McCluster, or we can't get rid of Dwayne Bowe, or we can't get rid of Dontari Poe, or we can't get rid of Brandon Flowers, or we can't get rid of Eric Berry. We got rid of all those guys, and the franchise as a whole became better, and we won a Super Bowl. And I believe that much in Brett Veach and Andy Reid running this organization, that if they tell me it's time for so-and-so to go, then it's time for them to go.
Blaine Gabbert played in this game against the Chiefs as well. Hot garbage.
Well, he pulled off one of the great bamboozles in sports history by leaving college early, didn't he?
Yeah.
He became a first-round pick and has made $21 million.
And he's still in the league.
Oh, yeah, he's playing for Tampa
yes,
now.
Yes, yeah. He's still in the league somehow, some way. But, yeah, he got his early money. But he's made $21 million since coming out in 2011. 2012, he probably would have slid into a much different spot in the quarterback class. Picked the right time to come out. Maybe he could have accentuated his skill set, but he's still in the league. I'll give him credit for that. But the Jags had Gabbert, Chad Henne, Ricky Stanzi wasn't dressed on that day, but was on the roster, and they were using Denard Robinson as a Wildcat quarterback as well on that team. Yikes. But how about that crew?
It was awful. But you look at the 2012 draft, and I remember when he came out in 2011 and everybody was praising Blaine Gabbert. Oh, what a great decision. There's no way he would have been drafted in 2012. Well, look at this bunch of quarterbacks that came out the year after that they said Blaine Gabbert wasn't better than. Andrew Luck out of the league. Robert Griffin out of the league. Ryan Tannehill. Still playing, right? Tannehill's still out there somewhere playing, there. Right?
Andrew Luck out of the league.
Well,
I mean,
he is. Yeah. Brandon Whedon out of the league. I mean, these were all these first-round quarterbacks that were taken the year after Blaine Gabbert when they told Blaine Gabbert he better come out in 2011 because he couldn't match up to 2012. All of the first-round quarterbacks except for Ryan
around?
Tannehill are out of the league.
He's still around. Okay. Good job, Blaine.
And Blaine Gabbert's still around.
Way to hang on.
Way to go, Blaine.
Big story coming up. And he couldn't be Pip. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Staff Hour brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. Ryan Scott and the crew taking appointments again to get you on the road again. Stereo speakers, radar detectors, and more. They love to work on cars, trucks, boats, motorcycles, golf carts, anything. Check them out. Santa Fe Auto Sound, 83rd in Santa Fe, or online at santafeautosound.com. They're looking to get you on the road again. Plenty to get to over the next 30 minutes. He's no Pip. Questions leading into the NFL season, which should make you feel great about your particular squad, and the cheaters at it again.
Yes, so he is, in a big way.
We will discuss.
Ooh, I got mad yesterday about
you,
this.
You really did.
I was hot.
Time now for the big story.
Everyone, I'm sorry for the delay, but the big moment has finally come.
It's the big story.
This may be the biggest thing that's ever happened.
If it's what you're talking about, it's what we're talking about.
My God, are you still talking?
On Fesco in the Morning.
Brought to you by Novel Place Senior Living in Overland Park in Blue Springs, a novel choice in senior living. Sometimes players that are out of the game, when they come back and give advice, I kind of roll my eyes and go, okay, you're not part of this.
Right.
Feels like there's something going around from a former player that sounds to me like a little some sage advice.
Yeah, it really is. And, a lot of times when we're young, we never take advice from our elders, Josh. Like, how many times in your 20s and even maybe into your 30s, you're like, whatever, old man, I'm not listening to that. But then you get up there in age and you go, man, I should have listened to that guy back in the day. Well, I think that guy for Major League Baseball right now is Tom Glavine. The more I hear, and I'll get to what Tom Glavine said in a minute, the more I hear, the more I read, the more that I do the due diligence on what's going on with Major League Baseball, the less and less convinced I am that we're going to have a baseball season. I just don't think there's enough want to have a baseball season by the players in particular, okay? The players, I just don't feel like really absolutely want to go out there and play baseball. And until I get a sense that the players want to go out there and play baseball, I don't think the players will go out there and play baseball. Every day there's another reason why they can't. Oh, we can't spit sunflower seeds? Well, forget about it. I don't know how we're going to play if we can't scratch ourselves and spit. Every day there's something different that Major League Baseball has to go through, and the goalposts seemingly get further and further away from the finish line right now.
Or the foul pole, however
you want to put it, right? I don't know if you get that sense. I just get a sense that Major League Baseball players don't want to go out there and play. Now, that's my perception.
I've kind of tried to see both sides for a while on this one, and I feel like, okay, you could be the first ones back. Have all of your questions answered before you go. I'm cool with that.
Right, sure.
Because if people are having doubts, some people right now don't have doubts. They're just willing to go back out in the public.
Right.
Right? And get back to normal life. There are others that are a little more apprehensive, and I get it. Mm-hmm. You got to kind of find your own comfort zone. So why should baseball players to me be any different?
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a little apprehensive about things. I haven't been to a grocery store, even to Costco, since March. And that's rare for me. I was a twice, three times a week Costco, man. That's not even a week's worth of Costco, you know? So I've avoided a lot of things right now, and I'm slowly assimilating myself back into things that are going on. And by slowly, I mean, not really. So I understand the apprehension, but I also see that, you know, we got golf starting back up. We've got, you know, Korean baseball leagues going on right now. We've got soccer leagues going on. It seems like for some athletes, there's a want to go out there and play.
I mean, NASCAR aside,
yeah,
some of these are
away.
I don't know what you did in Korea to get going.
Right.
I don't know. Are you further ahead? I don't know.
But we watch it every day. Some people wear masks. Some don't. Dudes are kissing each other. Yeah,
if soccer's on TV in Germany, that's in Germany.
Right.
You know what I mean? NASCAR should be a nice little test balloon. Again, we had Sunday's race.
We got another one tonight.
But is that a – still not a contact sport. It's still not a you don't see the athletes.
Right.
Right? You can't really look them in the eye until they're done driving or whatever.
Sure.
It's still kind of cars going on. Is that too distant? Is that not quite real enough yet? So I'm cool with them asking every question they need to feel safe to come back. Now, the next layer is, if you do get the finances in the way, and now we've had about a week or so of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
With each passing day, if you're going to fight over money, that's going to wear thin really, really fast.
Really fast. And America's not going to stand for that. And baseball's worried about losing money this year. They're going to lose their whole game if it ends up being that they're fighting over money at this point in time, which is what we said from the beginning. But it seems to me other sports are finding ways to try to play. Baseball seemingly is, and I say baseball, I mean baseball players are seemingly finding reasons not to play. I feel like the owners want to get out there, obviously, and get going. But at the end of the day, if baseball doesn't happen and baseball doesn't play, the owners aren't going to be the ones that are to blame, Josh. It is going to be on the players. And that's what Tom Glavine is saying to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He said, quote, "If it were to come down to an economic issue, and that's the reason baseball didn't come back, you're looking at a situation similar to the strike of 94 and 95 as far as fans are concerned. Even if players are 100% justified in what they're complaining about, they're still going to look bad." And Tom Glavine is absolutely 100% right about that. If they get all the medical stuff ironed out, and it seems to be that they've got just about all of that medical stuff ironed out. Like, again, I go back. If it's okay for the Korean Baseball League, and it's okay for youth leagues in Kansas City, and if it's okay for other folks to start to go back to work, and it's okay to get your hair cut again, what's the holdup with Major League Baseball? Like, I can't process that in my mind, and I don't understand what the big holdup is.
And you're going to have way more layers than it takes for me to go to a sit-down restaurant right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you're going to have way more protections to go do some of that stuff in baseball than you are in, you know, general life.
Right. So I guess I can't comprehend, and maybe I don't have the mental capacity to comprehend, like, why baseball players are being so stringent upon returning to an empty stadium to play in front of the TV cameras and their teammates, and everybody is going to be screened and taken care of in the best manner possible. Like, the NFL yesterday said, we're probably going to have some positive tests. Major League Baseball players are acting like we have to be totally immune to this before we're even going to consider going back out there. And that's just not the case. We could go years before this virus is eradicated from planet Earth. There was a doctor who put out a publication the other day, and it's kind of making its way around, and he comes from the University of Wisconsin, and he was talking about, you know, the coronavirus. His name is Dr. James Stein, a cardiologist based at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and he's talking about COVID, and he says it could be years before this virus is completely eradicated. So what are we supposed to do? Shut down everything for years until this virus is gone? That's ultimately how I feel Major League Baseball players are acting right now. They don't want to come back if there's the slightest chance of anything happening to them, and that's just not reality. The reality is this thing is not going to leave planet Earth for years to come, and everybody is going to make some consolations. Everybody's going to be more protective. Everybody's going to take more precautions in the way that we do everyday life, and it just seems like Major League Baseball players, again, perception, Josh, and perception is reality, but the perception to me is Major League Baseball players aren't willing to budge to make the game happen, and that's disappointing to me, and I think it's disappointing to a lot of people right now.
And again, I think there's a lot of justification on their end for it, but will it resonate?
Will it resonate? I don't know. No. I don't think it will.
That's part of the problem. I still think you got to do you in this situation for the players. You got to make the decision on your own, but you also have to realize the end game, the perception end game of it all might not be in your favor.
Right.
It might not be in your favor when it's all said and done, especially if this continues to stretch out. Felt like we were making really good progress for
sure,
a little while,
yeah.
and then hit the wall last week.
Right.
And now it's a back and forth. There was a big write-up in the New York Post about almost like a he said,
right,
involving the players and the union and a memo that was leaked and whether or not the even though the owners agreed to pay the players their prorated salaries, they left themselves some wiggle room to come back to the table if there weren't fans in the stands. Now the union saying no, that wasn't the case at all.
Yeah.
So you're getting this little infighting that
now you're starting to get to the money stuff.
The longer it drags on, it's going to be a bad look for everybody involved.
It is, and ultimately, you know, Major League Baseball is facing a crossroads right now, guys. I mean, they really are. I mean, you're looking at a sport that is still making a lot of money. It's a $10 billion a year industry. So let's not think that we're crying poor about Major League Baseball. But it's not America's pastime. It's not the most popular sport in America anymore. And if they're worried about losing money this year, Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball players ought to be concerned what the future of their sport's going to be if they don't play this year. And ultimately, the perception is they couldn't get it done over money. And I think ultimately, Josh, no matter what happens and how this plays out, if Major League Baseball doesn't have a season this year, regardless of what they say, the American public is going to say, you guys couldn't agree over money. And that's what the perception is going to be. Major League Baseball right now, I think if they want to save their sport, not just for this year, but for the future, if you want to save your sport, you find a way to get back and play, and you stop, you know, bickering in public, and that's why the NFL has handled this thing brilliantly. Shut up, dummy up, and I'll be the one that speaks, says Roger Goodell. And you're looking at the NFL, and you're seeing them making attempts in every possible way to play. We've joked about the college and the way that they're handling things, but by God, they're trying everything they possibly can to get college football going, and it doesn't seem like Major League Baseball players are trying to put in that same type of effort to play as all these other sports are, and that's disappointing to me.
PTI on ESPN discussing LeBron, MJ, and now Pippen in the mix as well. Would LeBron have played better with MJ than Scottie Pippen did?
Oh, I think they could have been great together. LeBron would pass the ball to Jordan. Jordan would take the shot. LeBron fashions himself a facilitator, and Jordan has always fashioned himself a hero. I mean, what impressed me in what I read about this was a quote where LeBron said that he paid specific attention to what Scottie Pippen was able to do with Jordan. And then he said in this direct quote, it would have been a whole other level with him playing along with Jordan. So it's pretty much saying to Scottie, hey, it's been nice. There's a cab waiting for you. Get in and see you around. So, yeah.
I'm tired of everybody taking shots at Scottie Pippen because last I checked, he's got twice as many rings as LeBron.
It's just me. I'm the only one
twice.
Who does.
No, apparently not, because you quoted LeBron. And LeBron, you know, if that was a shot, I would just say one guy has twice as many rings as the other guy. I would just point that out.
Well, he was also playing with MJ. But
who's taking shots at Scottie Pippen? That's the first time I heard that anybody's really taking shots at Scottie.
Well, Scottie's taking shots for years. for years.
Has taken shots? Or
yes.
Been, really?
Oh, for sure, right? Who is he without MJ? I mean, that
oh, he's been receiving shots.
Yeah.
I was like, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, he's always been, you know, what would he have been if he didn't have Michael?
Right,
you know?
Okay.
How is he a top 50 all-time player? He was with Michael.
Yeah.
I think he was a heck of a player, but I think more importantly, he knew his role and understood his role and accepted his role. Granted, he wanted more money. You saw that during the documentary, right?
Yeah, sure.
Could LeBron been the running mate? I think from a skill perspective, yeah. They'd have been really good together, right? If they could have just been just X's and O's basketball.
I think they could have played maybe 2 minutes together and it would have got ugly fast.
I don't think the temperament of LeBron is the same as the temperament of Scottie Pippen, and I don't think he would have handled the running mate aspect of that very well.
No, I don't either. I don't think LeBron could have been the number two, so to speak, to Michael Jordan. I think it takes a special player to do that. It takes a special coach to make sure that that happens as well, which is what Phil Jackson was and why I continue to say he's the greatest coach in the history of American professional sports for the way that he was able to go out there and manage those egos. But as good as LeBron and MJ would have been on the court and how fun that would have been to watch, I just think they're both type A personalities and both had to be the center of attention, as we're seeing right now. This documentary started because Michael Jordan saw all the praise LeBron got for winning a championship in Cleveland. So he decided, all right, I need a 10-part documentary on ESPN. Let's go. Let's do this thing. This documentary comes out. Then you see LeBron James not getting enough attention. So he starts rolling out stories from when he could have played for the Dallas Cowboys in 2011, which is a decade ago when nobody's even asking him about playing for the Dallas Cowboys. And so they're always, in my opinion, trying to one-up each other to try to show that each other is better. And they're both very petty. They both, in my opinion, very low self-esteem when it comes to this kind of stuff. When it comes to each other, they always got to try to feel like they're doing something better than the next guy. I just don't think two people with that type of personality can work well together and have success. You have to understand your role in a team, whether it's a basketball team, a baseball team, your office team, whatever the case may be. Everybody a different skill set and a different mentality, and you have to find a way to mesh those together. And if LeBron and MJ are out there together, boy, oh boy, at the end of every game, one guy's going to be complaining that he didn't get enough shots, he didn't get his, he's hogging the ball. I just don't see that being an effective dynamic from an all-encompassing standpoint. Now, from a playing standpoint, maybe it could have been great, but I don't think it would have been. I think Scottie Pippen was the perfect player at the perfect time for Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think Pippen was a perfect running mate. Absolutely perfect running mate. And, yeah, you can have those questions whether or not he could be the lead dog, and that's fair.
Right.
I mean, we saw him shut it down that one time, and then that was documented during the Last Dance as well. And then also the injuries and the headaches and whatever. It's some questionable things that Pippen had in his background. You're like, I don't know if he could have been the lead dog necessarily,
right.
But there's no doubt to me that he was the best running mate.
But there's some people that just aren't able to be the lead dog, and it's okay to be the running mate and to find your role as the running mate, because, boy, did they have success, Josh. I mean, 6 championships in 8 years, you'll take that every day of the week,
sure.
Right? They had a lot of success being,
and
you
Scotty
know,
got a check at
other.
The end,
and
so he's
Scotty
good.
Got paid at the end, and everything worked out well, and everybody made their money, and everybody's still making money, and, you know, I just think it was the perfect guy at the perfect time. I mean, I look at, you know, Patrick Mahomes right now and his, you know, Michael Jordan comparisons that we're already starting to see, and how he's kind of ahead of the curve, as we've been saying for a while now, of Michael Jordan. And we're seeing the way that even his teammates, like Travis Kelce, that's a big personality, right? Even he knows it's Pat's team. Like, everybody in the Chiefs organization understands that it's Mahomes' team. If he had somebody out there that was like a LeBron James playing with him right now, who had to have the ball every time and complain, it was like a Keyshawn Johnson, get me the damn ball, this team wouldn't have had the success that it's had over the last 2 years. It's about understanding your role, and then it's about the leader of the organization, Andy Reid, making sure that everybody understands their role and everybody's taken care of and everybody's satisfied. And that's why it works. I mean, you can't have too many big egos out there getting in the way. Otherwise, you will never be able to accomplish championships.
The Chiefs are in a really, really, really good spot. And here's just another example. This comes from ClutchPoints.com.
Big website.
A big website. I don't. But they wrote a piece, 3 biggest questions for the Chiefs entering the 2020 NFL season. And if this are your 3 questions, you're in a great spot. Mm-hmm. You're doing a lot of things right.
Yeah.
So here are the three questions that they had for the Chiefs entering 2020. Will there be complacency? Fair question. Any team coming off a Super Bowl, how do you handle coming off a Super Bowl? It's a valid question.
Yeah.
The Chiefs have said all the right things. All the right things from Andy on down. They've all said the right things. But will there be complacency? You don't know until you hit the field.
Right. You don't
you
know.
You don't know how that result's going to be. But they're saying the right things. The message is on point. Whether or not that comes to fruition when you hit the field, we will see. But I think
it just doesn't seem like there's going to be complacency.
But valid question.
Yep.
Second question. Will Chris Jones' contract situation cast a dark cloud over the team?
Chris Jones. I think you had the perfect explanation for this earlier when we were talking about
it. The players don't care?
They don't care.
Yeah. I pose these questions years involving players. Like, they get the business, man. They get it better than we do. The fans do.
Well, it is their industry.
They understand the dynamic of it. They're willing to stand by their guy, but they also realize they got a job to do too.
Right.
And it's not going to cast any dark cloud at all. If he holds out, for instance, they move on. If he plays under the salary cap, he's on the field. Or under the franchise tag, he's on the field. If he gets a long-term deal done, he's happy and you go about your business. Those do become overvalued. They're more storylines than they are actual dark clouds within an organization. It factors into us and to media and to fans way more than it does in-house.
And it really doesn't factor into those guys until they take the field and that guy's not next to him. And then they're like, oh, wait a second, that guy's gone.
But then they just go and play.
Right. Then they just go and play.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it could have an impact if he's not playing.
Right.
Sure. I don't think it still doesn't cast a dark cloud over the franchise. And then the number one question, biggest question involving the Chiefs heading into 2020, who will be the number one running back? Man, if that's a burning question, I'm cool. I'm absolutely cool with it.
Right.
You got Damian Williams, who was great down the stretch, was really good in the Super Bowl, and you added a very dynamic rookie running back with your first-round pick. And you had a pick of a running back last year in the draft as well. And then you had a backup running back that's still with the team as well. And then you acquire – they have enough of a complementary group that I don't frankly care who's the number one running back. As long as you're getting productivity out of that position, I don't care who's number one.
Yeah, well said.
I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
If Damian Williams is the starter on opening day, good for him. If Clyde's the starter on opening day, good for him. Is that group giving you everything you need?
Yeah.
Then I'll be good. Are they improved from a season ago?
Yeah.
Damian Williams has put together now kind of back-to-back late-season runs. Now, can he do that over the course of a full season? That would be great. But certainly his end of season the last 2 years have been great. LeSean McCoy's got a much better track record, obviously, in his career than an unknown rookie out of LSU. But we saw he didn't give you anything last year. This rookie is going to give you something. Right, he's going to be in the mix to play and play a lot. I frankly don't care how it shakes out as on the depth chart.
Well, the only people who care are fantasy football owners, and if you're a fantasy football owner, you probably already know you don't draft the Chiefs running back because they're going to be a running back by, and I hate to say by committee because it makes it sound like you don't have any good players, but the best way
complimentary
to complimentary running back. I like that term, Josh. I think ultimately, when you're a successful team in the NFL. You can go out there and you can utilize multiple people at your running back position. You have to. Like, let's look at the Carolina Panthers. God love them. They wasted money on Christian McCaffrey, okay? They paid him all that money. What happens if he gets hurt? Who you got, right? Yeah. What do you got? You got nothing. You're done. Your season is over because you're relying on one running back to power you. In the NFL, in this day and age, you've got to have multiple running backs to give you an opportunity to be successful. There will be injuries. There will be times when a guy needs a break. There will be times when a guy, you know, like LeSean McCoy is having a case of the fumbleitis, and you got to get him out of the game. You need to have options at that running back position. And Andy Reid has had options at that running back position since day one. We went and watched his first game as a head coach. Cyrus Gray seemingly got as many opportunities as Jamaal Charles did in that game. So Andy Reid has never ever had a this is our number one running back. They've always had a great group of running backs that were interchangeable parts that they could mix and match and do multiple things with. And that's ultimately, in my opinion, how you get to be a championship type of team. Have multiple players, have multiple guys out there that can do different things, that can do the same thing, and you can interchange their parts. That's how you have a successful franchise at the running back position. You can't rely on one guy, because if you do, you're done for.
Eric Bieniemy discussing the running back situation with reporters yesterday and putting no pressure on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He was asked, how's the breakdown going to work itself out?
Veach and his entire staff did a great job of evaluating the kid. Collectively, as a coaching staff, we felt we did a great job of evaluating the talent. But on top of that, and I think this is more important than anything, we know the person. And we know one thing that kid is going to do. He's going to come in and work his tail off. Now, he's just going to be a piece of the puzzle. You got Damian Williams, who did a hell of a job for us last year. He's also going to have an opportunity to play with one of his former teammates. And then we have Darwin. And then we got the young kid out of that played with the Oakland Raiders and DeAndre Washington. So we have a unique situation where he can come in and have an opportunity to learn from a collective group. But also, we want to make sure we utilize him the right way and making sure that he's mentally prepared to go when it's time to go.
No pressure.
None.
We're going to bring him into this room. We're going to compete. We're going to see how it shakes out. I'm cool with that.
I am too.
Now, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire emerges as the go-to guy and proves he's not, great. If Damian Williams holds that off, great. If it brings the best out of all of them, fantastic.
I think you're going to see Damian Williams more running, and I think you're going to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire more with catching the ball out of the backfield. I mean, that's the way I perceive it now. Obviously, all that can change as the season goes along and game plans get developed and we see what we have. But in my opinion, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was brought in because that Kareem Hunt, that wheel route out of the backfield that we saw, you know, in his first game, that's been lacking since Kareem Hunt's no longer been part of that team. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire brings you the ability to do stuff like that you haven't been able to do from that position over the last couple of months.
Surprise, surprise, Tom Brady's out here cheating again.
Cheater.
All over the Tampa Bay Times yesterday. Exclusive photos. Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady works out with teammates in Tampa. They went to a local high school and started throwing the football around.
That's right.
And not just that, but in their Bucs gear.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Tom Brady had a creamsicle jersey.
Okay,
on.
But they all had Buccaneers helmets.
Well.
Okay, so someone has been to the facility to smuggle out helmets.
Right. When you're not supposed to be at the facility.
Right?
Yeah.
They smuggled them their gear, and they were pictured practicing on a field in Tampa.
And they were not socially distancing. Tom was under center, his hands up some guy's butt, taking a snap. And then there were other dudes out there running around high-fiving and things like that, so they weren't properly following the rules. It's increasingly clear by the day, by the minute, by the second, by the minisecond, that Tom Brady learned cheating from Bill, but Tom Brady took it to the next level. It's like leaving the fat kid alone with a slice of pie, and he finds the whole pie and eats the whole pie.
So Alex Cora took his cheating scandal to another city?
That's exactly right. Okay. That's exactly right. That's exactly how that works. No social distancing going on. Every other team's out here following orders of the NFL, and Brady just operates on his own. Brady used someone that used to be someone that I would root for and I cheered for, but after his behavior during the COVID times and acting like rules don't apply to him, I hope he stinks in Tampa and loses every game.
Yep, my Frank's out there wearing shoulder pads, Bucks helmets, and looking like they're having a good old time. And then Tommy's also like hawking pills too, right?
Well, yeah. Then he's hawking these pills. Do we have the audio of the Tom Brady? Like his TB12 stuff is hawking a pill that is basically an immune booster, and all of a sudden it came out now during COVID times when everybody's looking to stay healthy and boost the immune system. Now Tom Brady's got an immune booster he's selling.
Seems smart. I don't know.
Over the years, I've learned how important it is to be proactive in taking care of my own body. So eating healthy, staying hydrated, and being active, along with the right supplements, have helped me stay at my very best. And certainly, a strong immune system is important for all of us. So I'm really proud to announce this amazing new product from TB12 that will provide you guys exactly what you need to stay healthy, strong, and resilient for whatever comes your way. Check this out. You are going to love it.
Love it.
You get love
I'm not
it.
Sure the Tampa Times had him passing out those pills to players, but he might have. He might have. So
now all of a sudden when everybody's concerned about their immune system and making their he never mentions COVID, but I think the assumption's
Tommy's
there.
He's been hanging on to this for a while.
Boy, now all of a sudden Tom Brady's schlepping immune booster pills.
Oh, Tommy.
Boy.
You're a peach.
He's been freed from New England, and he's letting it all hang out.
All bets are off. Staff Hour brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. An NFL bet you might be sure of. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.